time to bring in our esteemed panel. So all let's right. go ahead and turn it on.
All right.
Oh, look, and Will's talking about
something.
2-acre
property. It's a double wide. I wasn't expecting to be moving into a double wide, but it's very comfy, and it's been.
Can you not hear us?
It was so great to spend the year on Marrowstone, get a new puppy, have that outdoor time during the craziness of the pandemic.
Hey, Will.
And work from home throughout it.
So maybe you can get the PUD to get some good Wi-Fi out, some good broadband out.
I wonder why that's not coming on. Yeah, wow.
Okay.
Okay, let's make sure that this is, oh, that's why.
It was unmuted.
Wow. Okay, now let's go in. No, that's turntable.
Oh, that's right. All right.
Yeah. So go over to comp.
There it is.
Bring it all the way up. There we go.
So
we got a snippet of our esteemed panel's private conversation before we had to kill the audio. So now we know all your secrets. Just kidding. I have no idea what you were talking about.
Perfect.
We're making the sausage over here at KPTZ because Michael's going to fill in for me while I go to deepest, darkest Alaska next week. So any technical difficulties are entirely his fault.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. I take all the blame.
You should.
Aqua Sea Foam Shed.
So we've got Michelle Sandoval. Welcome.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. Going really well. And then Will O'Donnell, you're here as well. Will.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Hey, it's going well. So this entire segment started because I was like, I know I'm going to try and get Jonathan Evason, but I need another guest. And I was like, I can always talk to Will about our problems. And I'm like, we talked enough about our problems. Maybe we should try and solve them. So then I was like, I'll get a therapist. And then I realized it would be kind of a HIPAA violation to get a real therapist talking to us live on the air, probably, especially for some joint therapy, not marijuana involved, but... And Michelle offered up her services as a real estate therapist and city government therapist, and I figured, why not? I mean, Michelle can probably solve all of our problems, right, Will?
Of course. I already have, haven't I? Gee whiz.
That's I don't know. What do you say about that, Will?
I'm just so down right now. It's really hard to just feel like there's any light at the end of the tunnel. And so I'm hoping you guys can help me today.
Well...
My offer was not any sort of sarcasm-induced response to your Facebook call. I'm always very serious and have no sarcasm or sense of humor in my responses at all.
Never. No, Michelle, you're a Facebook expert, and I think Will and I agree on that. You can walk the line between sarcasm and realness very, very well.
I don't know about that.
You are my favorite government Facebook follow for sure, Michelle.
That's salty, kind of.
Let me qualify this.
No, you run that line of keeping it real and also keeping it professional, but getting into things and hearing people out but giving it back a little bit. So it's a good follow. I recommend. Oh.
Thanks.
Yes, follow
Thank
Michelle
you very much.
Sandoval.
Just wait till I'm out of office at the end of the year, man. No holds barred.
Yeah, that's something we haven't really celebrated yet. I mean, not to celebrate you being out of office, but you.
Oh, many people will, I'm sure.
you're coming to the close of a long tenure. How long is it you've been in city government and government alone?
It'll be 20 years. Yeah, at the end of the year.
What is wrong with you for doing it so long? Jesus.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's extremely informative and I have really enjoyed it, and it has made me, both love people and love our town and absolutely hate people and wish that, I had a magic wand to make government move a whole lot faster. But it's been a really incredible time. You get to see a town in transition. I think we've been in transition for a long time, but particularly the last few years. And it's kind of remarkable what Port Townsend has gone through in the 30 years that I've lived here and in the 20 years that I've been on council. So yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Well, congratulations. And what are you going to do with your copious free time?
my copious free time. It will be nice to have Mondays off and not to have all these Zoom meetings that we've been having. And I will be better able to manage business and take care of my family. And I think that maybe I should reverse that order, take care of my family and then take care of business. But, you know, I'll be able to go out for a walk once in a while, and my dog would appreciate that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
and I will be able to start to drink earlier on Monday evening.
And drink less from a point of self-medicating and more from just like, this feels good.
Yeah, exactly. Not just out of frustration. Yeah.
Well, Will, what about you? Are you retiring this year as well?
I feel like I'm paying for my retirement that happened when I met Michelle back in like 1999. I moved out here and bought a farm. So yeah, I was retired, you know, up until about 40, and now I got to pay for that retirement by going into government service.
Oh man,
which has been good so far.
Yeah, you are a servant of the government at this point. You're the social media scion of the PUD.
I'm not really, because I keep a minimum presence on social media. For myself and for the PUD, because I really don't want to get into all the battles. I just want people to know when their power is out, what's happened, and when it's going to come back on.
Yeah. Well, and you are also the father of a graduate today, are you not?
I am. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit wild, and also just absolutely just another day. And I feel like I'm failing him somehow by not being weepy all day, but he's been so ready to leave the nest for 2 years, and graduating high school seems like it's going to be the least of his accomplishments, which sounds like a really egomaniacal thing to say, but that's where I'm at.
My favorite accomplishment of Finn recently was that he was on some kind of like sunglasses advertisement as Kate scrolled by on social media, and suddenly son's there promoting sunglasses.
Is it sunglasses? He's on one for like used watches, and I thought he was like marked by a pedophile. Like the ad totally creeped me out. I thought somebody like scooped up his content and put it in there because it's late at night. He's tired, and he's hawking this watch, and he's just so happy to have it, and yeah, it creeped me out. His mother and I discussed contacting the company and having it removed, but he swore he wanted to be on that.
He was not groomed for a watch advertisement.
Yeah. You know, the internet's a weird place, so you got to watch out for stuff like that.
So do you feel old? Because you have a son who will be in college.
No, I don't feel old at all. In fact,
really?
I don't feel old enough to be his father.
Wow. Know?
In some ways, like I feel like in some ways I'm still figuring out my life. That's part of why I think, you know, I'm having these feelings of, you know, like maybe I should feel more, you know, I'm trying to figure out my life, and he's already going off and doing his own thing. So I still feel like I haven't finished my teenagerhood. I think I'm stuck at 12. I think that's my development, is 12.
Well, there you go. Thank you for telling me that as your therapist.
Yes.
Yeah, 1988. I know how to react to you as a 12-year-old adolescent.
I really feel
boy.
It. Yeah. Sixth grade, 1988, that was my peak year, and I haven't figured out how to recapture after that. Yep.
Well, you both have huge, huge milestones in your lives this year. And you know, I feel like I'm in your, well, I'm in a different kind of a boat, but, definitely some major, changes, but like everything is starting to feel super hopeful, as life kind of goes back to its new normal, whatever that means. I'm just talking around my things. But
you've had a lot of transition in the last year, and Michelle, you have, we all have. It's been a strange, for me, it feels like I've actually settled into life in after a number of years of transition and uproot and change, and now feels like it's finally all settling out. But I know for you guys, Paul, you're probably settling out a little bit after some upheaval, but that the road is still not fully set ahead. Is that correct?
It's somewhat precarious and unknown. But, you know, it's sort of like having a kid, right? Because you go through these stages with children where you kind of get used to how things are and then they all change, right? Like it's like I'm used to my kids ripping all of the food out of the cupboards and, you know, bathing in the flour. And then all of a sudden that phase is over. And instead they're like, you know, I don't even know if I can remember half the stuff that they were doing because I have this amnesia for it. But it definitely feels like that. Like once I get used to a stage in this, it changes. That I like to think that it's all, you know, changing for the better. And something that I remember, you know, you and I spoke about at the beginning of the pandemic, or, you know, it was like as the pandemic was happening, Will, was you and I were both like, hey, actually, with this pandemic thing, it's awful that people are dying and people aren't listening and following these things and protecting themselves. But at the same time, we actually really enjoyed that we could just like put our outside lives on pause and basically go inward at that time. And that's something that, you know, I still think about where it's like almost the pandemic for me was an easier thing to deal with psychologically than what came, you know, sort of out of it. And they were issues that would have come out of it probably whether or not the pandemic happened in the first place. But there was some kind of psychic mental relief from having to go indoors that I really enjoyed and needed at the time.
Yeah, I've said that to people when they've commented on what a year I've had with Marty, my husband, having a stroke, and then the pandemic, and us not being able to visit him inside of the different facilities, et cetera. But what I've said to people is, in a way, the pandemic really saved me in terms of the process, because Marty had the stroke on February 3rd and was in the hospital for nearly a month and then was moved to Kaitai here. And we had about a week with him in person and then it shut down. And then we visited him outside of his window for 4 months, and people said, geez, all of this was horrible. And of course, all of it was pretty earth-shattering for my family. But for me, I realized that if life was at the pace that it had been, you know, just in quote-unquote normal time, I would have felt so completely lost and so out of sync with everybody. But because everybody was sort of shut down, particularly at the very beginning, and life was so in such an upheaval, I felt like I had everybody going through stuff along with me. Mm-hmm. And if time would have just kept going, I would have just felt so alone. And instead, I think that we all were much kinder to each other, and we were all on social media, and it was just it was a lifesaver for me in some ways, as bizarre as that sounds. And as Marty, you know, has become stronger over time and life has opened up, at least our family is a bit more in sync. Still, life is so very different, but, you know, there are good things that happened with the shutdown and with the pandemic. And that's one of them for me, is that I didn't feel as lonely, which is a bizarre thing to say because so many people felt so lonely during it. But but I think that was a benefit for me.
Mm. Yeah, that's so fascinating that the pandemic gave you the space to deal with the grief and what's happened, take the time and just focus on it. And that's really beautiful. I remember seeing your posts and feeling for you and just that being locked outside of the glass. We've got a call coming in for somebody.
I don't know what that was.
and then for other folks, you know, being locked inside the glass and being locked in the cage with their people. And I felt so lucky that I got, you know, trapped, you know, in COVID. The cage came down and it was myself and my partner and two kids and then another kid who was staying with us. And then my parents had just arrived. And so they ended up in the cage as well. And we were our own little bubble, and it was great. And it wasn't lonely. And it was nice to have the space to just be with each other. And also I really enjoyed the space to not competitive vacation, that we could just be here in this lovely place we live. I'm on Maristone. I could go to Fort Flagler every day, and I didn't feel like I had to book some life-changing trip to Asia or take my kids to 20 different enriching things that I can't really afford right now because everything's expensive. Yeah, that space was really precious, and I know I'm going to miss it. I know it's already going to go away. Definitely the urge to competitive vacation is back, internally and externally from seeing everybody on social media with what they're doing. And, you know, how about you, Paul?
That sounds, you know, very, very familiar. I mean, that the fact that we could just be in our place, and I mean, I'm just hearing you both talk, I'm like, well, is there some kind of, we talked about the psychological effects of COVID and lockdown and all that, but like there's some psychological effects of going back to normal too, and having to sort of like reacclimate. I mean, there's some things that I really missed, right? Like, I ain't gonna lie, I missed Great Wolf Lodge. I cannot wait to go back to Great Wolf Lodge. And I actually got mad, but I was like frustrated because Louisa, my girlfriend's, her ex took their kids to go to Great Wolf. And I was like, I wanted to be the one to take us to Great Wolf. but I had already signed up for Wild Waves, which I'm also very excited about. So these like communicable disease nightmares that were kind of off the table. Some of those I'm very excited about getting back to.
I don't know why they would have closed Great Wolf Lodge, because the bleach is getting up inside you every time you're going down that water slide. It's like, you know, the sunlight just coming out of you is just, you know, just radiating with disinfectant and health.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, you're probably right, and now you're making me have FOMO, where maybe I should have just gone. But then I would have been the guy who's on social media like, I'm a Great Wolf, and everyone's like, where's your mask? Where's your, you know? I feel like everything going back to normal, I'm super excited about it, you know, and in the scope of it, it's also like, wow, it is a completely new world for me. It is about as different as it could be from a year ago today. It couldn't be, in some ways, couldn't be more fundamentally different, the world that I'm looking at. And I don't miss those times, but it certainly is also this like, wow, it's a lot. And the only way that I've been able to psychologically cope with that is to just kind of take it one step at a time, one day at a time. And, you know, not try and plan everything out or figure it all out in the moment, but, you know, work the steps slowly towards, you know, wherever my destination is.
But here's the thing, since I'm older than both of you.
Yeah, give us your knowledge.
So as your therapist, I'm just going to say, the thing that you realize, I think as you get older, at least I'm starting to realize, I feel like I'm still trying to figure myself out and the rest of the world, is that, you know, this is life. It never settles down. And you think you're going to get into some routine, you know, it changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Paul asked for a song before, and I was just running to the house, but thinking about this conversation, there's a Bruce song, of course, but it says, hard times come and hard times go, and then hard times come again. And that is so true, is that it's an up and down all the time in life. Doesn't matter what age you are. And the thing is that really I'm pissed about myself is that I'm always about two stages behind, where I look back and go, oh, that was a really good time. Why didn't I appreciate that? And I've already, you know, gone two stages beyond that. And then two stages go beyond that. And then I'm thinking, oh, that was the really good time. Or looking at pictures of yourself. Do you ever do that? And you go, holy cow, did I look good? And I thought I looked like hell. Why didn't I appreciate myself back then? So it's just this, I just always feel like I'm playing catch up with appreciating where I've been. And so I'm trying to remember that now. And every day is a new day when I wake up. It can be horrible or it can be great. And you just got to ride with it, you know? And I don't think it really changes much. You're just, it's, this is what life is.
Well, on that note, let's listen to that song and we'll come back with some more therapy doled out from Michelle to Paul and Will, and maybe vice versa. Who knows? You're listening to Filter on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. All right, we're back on the air.
Oh, boy.
KPTZ 91.9 FM. Michael Grady sitting in the wheels of steel, getting it all figured out so I can go to deepest, darkest Alaska next week for reasons unknown to me, except I think there's a wedding involved. Michael, let's bring back up the comp one. We're talking to our esteemed panel of therapeutical individuals. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the segment is called. Some kind of therapy. That's what it's called. And we're with Michelle Sandoval and Will O'Donnell. And during the musical break, I, of course, got a message related to my current situation regarding my divorce. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm back in it. You know, it's like, right, your hard times come and go and you just like bounce around. And, you know, some great advice I got about divorce. A couple things. One was from Monica McHager. And she said, Paul, why does divorce cost so much? And I said, why, Monica? And she's like, because it feels so good. And so that was some advice that I got there. And also that you don't, there's no such thing as an easy divorce. Nobody wins in divorce. And, you know, you're just kind of all picking up the pieces as you go forward. And, so hard times come and go. I don't want them anymore, but you know, like Michelle said, just get ready for them. And it's sort of how you take care of yourself that lets you weather them. Right.
Indeed. Yeah. And I'll say, going to be married 40 years in October.
Wow.
And it's not a pretty sight sometimes. I remember when Will was getting divorced.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Will.
I was talking to him then.
Oh, my God.
And what did you say to me? I was checking in on you when we had a meeting once, real estate related meeting. And you said, you have no idea how hard it is to be married to somebody that has a strong personality. And I just looked at him and I thought, you are so wrong, because I don't know anybody who doesn't have a strong personality. And, you know, two strong-willed people, you said. And I said, you know, that fits me and Marty's description pretty well. And it can be hell. You know, there's a lot of respect that I have for Marty and I think him for me, but it has not always been easy. And, you know, he can't talk right now. He has aphasia. And so he's working with a great speech therapist, but after a stroke, he can't talk. And at one point, I mean, we do try to have a sense of humor about it. And I will still discuss things with him, even if he can't say things back to me. And I said, this is brilliant. For the first time in our marriage, I can just say it to you, and then I get to do whatever I want. And, you know, it's hard out there. People are tough on each other, whether they're married or getting divorced. And it's, I think if we were going to talk about, you know, anything that has changed in the years is speaking about social media, that can be a lifesaver. Mm-hmm. It is also the absolute pits. People are incredibly rude, mean, and it's just, I don't know, it's getting rid of all the pent up anger that we have, whether it's because of divorce or marriage or whatever, but it's pretty wild out there how mean people can be. And I think that, you know, whatever you're doing in life, it's intriguing to me when that inside of people come out. And that you would never expect from certain people. And then you see them in real life and you see them on social media and it's like, wow. So anyway, Marty gets to post all kinds of things on Facebook, but he only uses predictive text because he can't write right now. And so it's curious to see some of his predictive texts. And one night I had texted him a little emoji of love or something. And then his predictive text came back, "I can't talk right now," which I found completely fabulous, ironic, and heartbreaking. But you know, it's a wild world out there, whether you're getting divorced or you're struggling through the beginnings of your marriage or at 40 years. I can't imagine not being with him, but it has not been a easy road. It's just like I said, it's one day at a time, and some days are hard and some days are wonderful. And I think that's the big lesson. It's, you know, just making it through and trying to be kind to each other.
Yeah.
So this brings up two things for me, and I'm going to steal the role of therapist here.
Do it.
One, I prepared some quotes. I got all this information that I was ready for today, and just in case we need to use it. But that Michelle's anecdote brought up something, a quote from President Barack Obama. Here it is. Ready? "The fights you have are never about the thing you're fighting about. It's always about something else. It's about a story. It's about respect. It's about recognition, something deep." And I know that when I was married, the list of grudges that we had, we were always fighting every fight, you know, about who didn't put the milk away or something like that, was about 20 other things that we never resolved.
Right.
And in my current relationship, I'm trying so hard to never have fights about old things, like trying to deal with things as they come and have actual resolution. And we've been able to do that, which has been so great. And I'm happy about that, but we're only 4.5 years together.
Still,
and
that's
the other
great
thing I guess we could talk about that, but the other thing I wanted to bring up, and I was curious, Michelle, how that was for you. And I know Paul, with your new relationship, it might relate that, I was reading a quote from Cindy Crawford, and she talked about how she married Richard Gere very quickly when she was 26. She felt too young, and it was great, and she wanted to like everything that he liked. And then after a couple of years, she's like, "I actually don't like meditation. I actually don't like gerbils. I actually don't like any of these things. I just want to be myself." And then they got out of the marriage really quickly, and then she said she got remarried to a guy, and they were friends first. And being friends first, she doesn't ever have to be somebody that she isn't. And in this relationship I'm in, I feel like we were friends first, and that's been nice. And we also, it was somebody that knew my kids, so that was an easy transition. How about for you? I was curious, Michelle, about you and Marty, if you were friends first, or was he your boss? Was that the case? And how does that, okay.
No, we met, and he was everything that I wasn't, frankly, in terms of the first time I saw him, I thought, I didn't respond to him, let's put it that way. And he was gorgeous and not yet divorced and had a child and almost 10 years older than me. And people in Ventura where we were, had waited on him as a waitress, and they were all goo-goo about him because he was an author of a variety of books on vegetarian eating. And he was one of those people that was kind of woo-woo. And I was a 21-year-old party girl. I was a beach rat and a party girl, and not at all like that. And yet, he asked if he could come to a party at my house that I had, an annual Halloween party. And then he said, "But I have to bring my daughter because I have my daughter that weekend." I said, "Oh no, this is an adult party. This is like, you do not want kids anywhere near this party." So we were very opposite. And yet on our second date, the first date that we had, I had an out-of-body experience after we spent about 10 hours together. I was driving out of his driveway, and out of my mouth came the words, "I'm going to marry this guy." Mm-hmm. And I said out loud, "Holy cow, where did that come from?" And yet I knew. And on the second date, he asked me to marry him on our second date. And he moved into my house about 1 month later. Our first date was on election day in 1980. And that was when Ronald Reagan became president. And so just so you know, it was kind of funny because I thought he was this non-drinker vegetarian woo-woo person. And when I went over to his house for a skating date, he said, he started to tell me a story. And he said, "Yeah, I talked to this guy outside a bar." And it was like 11 a.m. I said, "You're at a bar this morning?" And he said, "I went and voted and I felt I needed a stiff drink once I realized Ronald Reagan was going to become president." And I thought, holy shit, this guy is a man after my own heart. And that was it. I was in love. And we moved in together a month after that. And we got married about 7 months later, and we've been married for 40 years. So we were not friends. We fell deeply in love quickly. And I wish that I would have known more, but I was young, and to become a stepmom when you're 21, 22 was really tough. And my parents were very, very religious and very Mexican. And for me to marry a previously married man with a child and a white guy was a trip. So, you know, it wasn't easy. And yet sometimes I think the universe speaks, at least it came out of my mouth, and I knew that I would be with him. So. Mm.
Yeah, I had that, you know, I've had that twice now. And you just, like, I've been in enough relationships to kind of know when it feels different, I think. And when it feels like something, you know, whether or not it ends well, it's just sort of like, this feels like something that could go beyond the level of, you know, I'm just going to see this person for a while. And just hearing you say, you know, that moment you feel in your chest. Yeah. Like, I've been there. And you know, one thing that I've had to reconcile through my divorce is remembering, you know, that relationships take work, but then there is a level of work that is an inappropriate level of work. There's a level of work that, you know, I told myself was something I should do that was, in a sense, gaslighting myself and being like, "You're not good enough," or "You're not strong enough," when you are doing, you know, everything you can to keep something together. So it's, and when people would tell me like, "Oh yeah, relationships, marriage is such hard work," I would always like take that to heart, being like, if I'm not feeling like I'm working hard, then it's not real. Right. And something you were talking about, Will, in terms of being friends first, you know, it's just something I have with Louisa, where it's just like, yeah, we've known each other for 10 years, like not, you know, like intimately or anything sort of beyond just a casual friendship, but there's this sort of knowledge about who we are that doesn't have to be sort of rediscovered, and we don't have to go and relitigate all these things or kind of create these new potential, you know, pitfalls because we didn't really know who the other person was. So that's something that definitely feels different this time around. Whereas at first I was just like, I was just ready to step off the cliff. And I don't want to make it sound like it's a cliff, because it was actually the best thing I ever did. And this is something else that has been on my mind a lot, is that thinking about when you have kids, and children are beyond regret, right? Children is not something you can go in and say like, "Oh, I wish I wasn't with this person." It's like, no, I absolutely am so happy I was with the mother of my children for the period that I was, and that I get to be their father, you know, for the rest of my life. That's just like the best thing that could have happened. And so, you know, these moments of looking back and being like, "Oh, it was hard work," but, you know, at the end of the day, there's not a moment where I won't think, "Oh, it wasn't worth it," you know?
Well, you know, Will, I want to say something about your quote and just your reflection on grudges. I think that can destroy a marriage. And, you know, I've been there, and you can hold a lot in. And if you don't air it, and I mean, one of the things that therapists do say is that you need to learn to fight. And, you know, that's hard to learn to fight because everybody takes it differently. Some people get over real quickly. Some people will have to storm out. And, you know, the different types of fighting are, I think, one of the things you have to learn in a marriage. But I just think it's kind of funny because the thing I always say about Port Townsend is you can tell how how long people have lived here by the length of their grudges.
Yeah, I will say to clarify my former statement about grudges, the problem so much was that we never stopped fighting. No grudge was ever settled. It was like everything ended in 10 rounds, but no decision. So we were going to have to come back for another 10 rounds.
Yeah.
And also, like, with being two strong people, it was always figure out, you know, like in the dance of a relationship, who's the lead? We were always fighting to be the lead. And if we weren't the lead, we were like, God, you are really a terrible lead. I'm just going to like follow you, but I just want you to know that you're doing a terrible job right now.
You and, that's part of life is that sometimes one person leads and then another times another person leads. And I think that that's the up and down of life as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's how you do it successfully is that you find a way. You can be too strong or dynamic or type A personalities as long as you can find a way to sit back and relax and let the other person lead and take your turns or find those areas where just being two strong personalities works for the task that you have at hand. And like Paul said, I feel the same. Like I don't have any regrets. I'm so glad for my children and so glad for all the experiences that I've had. You know, it's been great. In fact, kids are the only thing that I've never really been that stressed about. Haven't had a ton of anxiety about raising kids. I've always just enjoyed it. And I hear from a lot of other people just like that takes up a ton of their space. For me, it's always like money, friends. I'm terrible at having friends. Friends stresses me out so much. Yeah, but kids, I'm good with. Hmm.
That's awesome. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time here. I wonder, can we bring out Jerry Springer and get any kind of like final thoughts?
Probably hit Michelle with a folding chair right now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The Jerry Springer bit.
Well, you know, the wonderful thing about this small town is that everybody wears different hats and we run into each other at different times in our lives. But I think that there's a lot of glue here. And to me, it's so wonderful to see Will on this Zoom call because he's not afraid to show his face like you are, Paul, because you are not on this video with us.
My face, you wouldn't want it.
But, you know, for me to see Will through different times in his life and still see him being Will. And it's cool. I don't know, because we're pretty close in a small town. So I've had different encounters in terms of, you know, is wearing different hats for myself or for Will. And, you know, to see him on the upside right now and saying life is pretty great, it's really cool. And to see his kids grow before our eyes and see one of them graduating tonight, I mean, that's what's so awesome about the small town. And to see his like kick-ass daughter growing up in front of us all. You know, there's lots of good here.
Yeah, it's great to be in the fishbowl. Yeah, it's so fun. It, you know, Michelle, you were one of the first people I met because you showed us the first house that I ever bought when we first moved to town in 1999. And just having had so many different interactions with you when you were on the city council and I was helping run the farmer's market, when I wanted to start the creamery and you helped me find people to invest in the business. And so, you know, just seeing all the good things you've done for our community and seeing how you've grown and how you've changed and how you've been such a strong advocate in the community. You've been a great role model. If I ever did want to grow up, which I don't, I may try to pattern myself, you know, at least from some of the things you've done. Other things I don't want to talk about here, but, you know, that you can read about them on Facebook.
So not 20 years in city government for you, Will?
Wait. I don't plan to be in city government ever. No, I am strictly a bureaucrat. I'm a paid employee. I am not an elected official. I have no desire.
Well, I can't thank both of you enough for being here today and doing this strange therapy session. It's made me feel good to hear both of you talk, and I hope our listeners have enjoyed it as well. Will, you gave me a song